Blog Talk Radio.
Ooh. Yeah. You already know what time it is. It's that official time. Where we take this worldwide. Let's go. Listen.
So now it's time to turn it up. Surf the radio waves as we begin to burn it up. We all up in your area like landscape, definitely bringing you the power slamming pancakes. It's the mandate that you tune in. It's time to move out so we can move in and recognize that this is no illusion. I'm here to clear the air so that there is no confusion. It all started off in the book of Genesis when Jacob was wrestling with who he thought was his nemesis. And when the man saw he couldn't overpower him, he touched his hip but he really could have devoured him. And from that point then we hear a name change, rearrange the game, so now we gotta change. So I'm here to let you know it's time to listen to the Pancake and Power Slam show. Let's go!
Turn it up!
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up!
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up!
It's the Pancake and Power Slam show.
Turn it up!
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up!
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up!
It's the Pancake and Power Slam show.
Turn it up!
You are now listening to the Pancakes and Power Slam show by Crave Wrestling on Blog Talk Radio. Be sure to follow Crave Wrestling on Twitter at Crave Wrestling and join the Facebook fan page Crave Wrestling.
Episode 277, ladies and gentlemen, this is the Pancakes and Power Slam show. As always, I am Chris Featherstone, your host. Follow us at Crave Wrestling on Twitter and join the Facebook fan page, Crave Wrestling. Ladies and gentlemen, he's back on the show again. He was on the show, I believe, for the five-year anniversary, episode 200. It was one of those shows. I don't remember exactly what it was, but it was a little bit time ago. It was right after his WWE release, so whatever that was. But I'm proud to have him on the show again tonight to talk some New Japan, some Chaos, some G1 special. So I'm really excited to bring back on the show former WWE Intercontinental Champion Billy Gunn. How are you tonight, sir? Man, it was one of those monumental. I remember I was sick as a dog. That's one thing I do remember. I had to get up, but heavily medicated for that show that night because I was so sick. I was probably as sick as this is the 277th episode over 5 years, and that was probably as sick as I've ever been on the show. So. But, you know, it all worked out. But you're doing some, it sure does. At 53 years old, you are still running strong. Man, how do you do it?
That seems to be the question that everybody
asks.
Everything that I do, I adjust it so I can still do this at a high level because I still love to do it. It's not that I have to do it. It's just I have a passion for it. I love to do it. It's an awesome job.
Yeah.
And as long as I can still do it and do it at a level that I'm happy with and everybody else is happy with and I'm not slugging it out of, that doesn't happen there.
Yeah.
I'm going to do it. And to do it, I have to stay
train
my training and everything else that I do.
Yeah. Well, you still look like $1 million, so I found out what it was. It was the 200th episode. It was January of 2016, so it was a year and a half ago when you were on the show, yeah. So, a couple weeks ago, you were a part of history-making event, the first ever independently operated New Japan event in the States. Usually when New Japan comes over, they usually work with, a few years ago it was NWA, the past few years they've been working with ROH pretty heavily, but the first ever independently operated show was the G1 Special in USA that was just crazy successful. Of course, Kenny Omega won the tournament, the U.S. tournament. You had an opportunity to be a part of that history-making event by going against Intercontinental Champion Tanahashi. You were also in an eight-man tag match as well. Just let the listeners know how that experience was, being a part of a history-making event.
It was amazing. I mean, just, you know, to be where I'm at right now,
oh yeah.
He wants to work for them. He's the hottest friend other than WWE. So it's just to be invited and then in a form with Tanahashi, it's one of the things that they want to do, but he's amazing. And to be a part of that special was awesome. It was super honor for me. Probably one of the highlights of my career. At this point in my career, I mean, he asked to do that. And they could have asked me that.
Yeah.
And I feel special about that too. Because literally, they invited anybody would have had a present back to it.
Yeah.
It was that awesome to do. And suddenly, we make a great team with all of them. And then to get back to that second night to work on Tanahashi was awesome.
Yeah.
It really was. And it was cool. It was different to the show. I will admit that. Because Omega and Okada and they got everybody on the card. They did. The young guys took this. Oh, just crazy. They all did crazy stuff. And I wouldn't say bad things. It was just different. Me and Okada had to be different. It was the old school kind of field day trade kind of match.
Yes.
It was a little different for everybody at that stage of what the show was doing. So I won't deny that, but we still went out there and did our thing. I'm not going to feel bad about anything that we did at all.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I mean, well, I'm a traditionalist. I've been watching wrestling for over 30 years, so whenever that hill face dynamic still exists, those are the matches that I still watch because it's, you know, it's. I've written this many times. It's a comic book come to life. For every Joker, Batman, Robin, you know, there's a Green Goblin and for every Spider-Man, there's a Green Goblin. For every Batman, there's a Joker. You know what I mean? So. It has that dynamic. It should have that dynamic. Of course, you said like the Young Bucks, they kind of twirl, you know, they kind of walk the line, and a lot of people, you know, nowadays kind of walk that line. And unfortunately, there were many reports, and I've read about this as well, there were some reports that it wasn't very widely received from a positive standpoint of you being on the show personally, and, you know, you've been on the show before, and everybody knows that I'm not the one to politic and patronize. I would let you know if I didn't agree with it, but I actually liked it. I think it was a really good addition for someone like your name, who is an established WWE name, to be on that event to really kind of marry that relationship between Japan and the States. What are your thoughts or just a reaction of that?
Yeah, I mean, doesn't have to match mine. I don't think that everybody should. Everybody has their own opinion. But if you're being out there, don't start. You know, because I get it. Like, that's the first word. So I get a lot of people saying, oh, why? What have you done to, you know, deserve this title shot or be on this show or whatever? Well, I've said a lot of things.
Yeah, exactly. First of all, yeah.
I have often known in this case that it was hard to get it, I had hard to keep it, and I know being on that show probably drew some people to it. But you give it a diverse amount of people that you send that have many problems. I have lucky to be a part of a factory that concentrates one of the greatest factories of all time. Let's not undermine that at all.
Yeah.
So you put me on the show and then put me on a hot seat and then it's a title match, you get a little weary of what's going on. But you have to consider the whole show, right?
Yeah.
I get where we're on the show, we spin our name, the match that we had, the match that we're going to have.
Was Russo put you over? He called you a thoroughbred. He said, you know, he didn't understand why people were complaining. You know, very similar to the way I feel about it as well. Just because for your namesake and just the experience, and you were a former, you know, American, you know, Intercontinental Champion against a Japanese Intercontinental Champion. I thought, you know, I think that that was just a nice story as well. He also said something really interesting. He said that, you know, he put you way over. He said that, you know, he said that Billy Gunn, I'm paraphrasing, he said that Billy Gunn, even now, would be able to last longer in a UFC fight with Brock Lesnar than Samoa Joe. What are your thoughts on that? Yeah. Awesome. Fantastic. I appreciate your time. Let the listeners know where to find you and any other upcoming dates you have.
Wrestling platform, I'll probably be there.
Awesome. Yeah. Awesome. Well, thanks for coming on the show again, Billy. Thanks for just, you know, letting the listeners know just your thoughts on the G1 special. And it was a successful event, and, you know, we are very, very happy. Personally, I was very happy that you were part of it.
Thanks, man. I appreciate
it. Fantastic. Awesome. Thank you, sir. Have a good night. Bye-bye.
Billy Gunn, ladies and gentlemen, the one Billy Gunn and all of that good stuff. Ladies and gentlemen, I thank you, Billy Gunn, for being on the show for the second time. We figured out when he was here last time was the 200th episode. And I was serious. I was so serious about that thing. I was sick as a dog. I think I ended up having a flu, something like that. I ended up going to the hospital, I think, either that day. I think I was at the hospital that day, and came back from the hospital went to the hospital maybe after the show. Perhaps that's what happened. I went after the show, or I came back right before the show. One of those times. I think I ended up having the flu. It was terrible. I think it was right before the show because I had some medicine and they highly medicated me, and I was very loopy during that show that night. But it was successful, and I was thankful. I think I was one of his first interviews, if not his first interview after being released from the WWE. So that was definitely a privilege and an honor to do that. And it was great to have him back on the show tonight to talk some G1 special in USA. It was great to hear from him. Just the information that's been received as far as just the negative, perception by a lot of people. And I mean, you know, at the end of the day, what it boils down to is that it's just, that's what we deal with when it comes to a lot of, you know, today's fan base, when it comes to professional wrestling. That's the unfortunate thing we deal with. A lot of people have their own, take and their own way of expressing themselves, a different wrestler to be a fan of. But like I told him, and I'm a tried and true traditional fan, and it's the comic book come to life, and that's what wrestling's all about. No matter how people want to slice it, good versus evil is just professional wrestling. It's kayfabe, and when kayfabe is dead, wrestling's dead. So ladies and gentlemen, without further ado, let's bring on and it's funny because I had a flu then, and now the past few days I've been very ill as well. So having Billy Gunn on the show, I don't know, man. I was sick both times, but I'm feeling much better than I did the past couple of days. I've been very ill. But just like as you've seen with 277 episodes, it's funny because out of 277 episodes, I was actually planning on taking a day off and having some more, other people host and co-host the show the next few weeks. I don't know when, but it's funny. I think the only two times, I think maybe two times that I took off for the show is when my second child was born. In 2015, January 2015, my first child was born. It wasn't a day of the show, I don't think. But I think my second son was born on a Monday or a Tuesday. Let me find out when he was born. I think it was on a Tuesday. And I took that day off, but of course the show did not end. I still had some wonderful co-hosts. Yes, my son was born on a Monday, and that Tuesday, my wife was still in the hospital, and I stayed in the hospital for the show. I mean, during the time of the show. But I did call in, I believe. I called in for a little bit. And I think the other time is when I had back surgery. But the show, again, the show did not stop. The show did not be was not postponed. I had co-hosts kind of manning the show that night, both nights, and they did a fantastic job. I think Derek and Ryan took over for both the shows, if I'm not mistaken. So, yeah, they did a fantastic job. Ryan was on the show last week, and it was great. Thank you again. Ryan does a lot of backstage stuff now since you know, he's a husband and a father now, and he has a different schedule, but he does, you know, of course, people know that he was on the show. He was a co-host for the show. He was the pioneer co-host for a number of months. Then Derek took over for about 4 years. Then for about a year, we had different co-hosts from different websites. Plenty of big name websites we had every week. And then we camped on the co-host that we have now, the wonderful co-host that I'm going to bring on right now from Under the Mat Radio, Evan Tech Proud. How are you tonight, sir?
Doing good, brother. Doing good. Show got to keep going on.
Yeah, man, the show goes on. Yeah, and there's the times, and I had a flu, I think, with Billy Gunn. I had the flu about a month ago, about a month and a half ago. I had the flu as well, and continued the show. I had gallbladder surgery a few years back, and continued the show. So, yeah, listeners, you know, I'm a loyal guy.
Yeah, like you said, Pancakes and Power Slams been going on for 5 years. Under the Mat Radio has been going on for four, and I've only one time ever, out of 4 years, one time purposely canceled my show. So it was only on the Tuesday where I was just incredibly exhausted, and I could see my edit. I believe even you, Featherstone, told me, you made me say, brother, get rest.
I think I
took half the day off. I took off my show. The only time and without any deaths or emergencies, I took off. But it was only half a day because I took off my show and still came off yours that night. So,
mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So, yeah, you know, we're dedicated guys.
Yeah, man. That's one of the things, man. That's the thing about journalism is that, you know, you love it so much that you're dedicated in doing it. And it's, you know, it's I got to give kudos to, you know, the people who are in news stations and go to the most riskiest places, you know, ISIS and Iraq and Iran and, you know, doing war coverage and things like that. I mean, they're in the heat of the battle, still covering, you know, and that just goes to show. How, you know, when you're dedicated to this thing, man, as a journalist, you do what you got to do because the thrill of it is what gets you a high, and you get paid for the thrill, you know, and that's what makes it even better.
Yeah, I don't promote many shows, but if anybody has Amazon Prime, there's a series called Witness, and it, the documentary of four photojournalists, like you mentioned, of them going, like you said, in the trenches and, you know, the rough areas and the rough countries where, like you said, they go to the rough areas no one else would go to capture that moment.
Yep.
Billy Gunn's a great guy. I met Billy a year and a half ago, right after the interview released him. Funny backstage story with him. Who sucked true to my heart. The show he was at, sadly, James Ellsberg promotion, before he was James Ellsberg, was running it. Billy Gunn was there. The first show he did after getting released by WWE, a close friend of me and James Ellsberg, who was a fellow wrestler regionally. It was his last show. He wrestled, sadly, a week and a half later. He died in a motorcycle accident. So, you know, seeing Billy Gunn, you know, memorable for many different reasons. Good guy. Definitely enjoyed it. So we can't Billy Gunn this show. As a joke to say, I want Billy Gunn this King of the Ring. We can't Billy Gunn this show, man. You end up getting sick.
Yeah, man. If he comes on the third time, I didn't do an extra wing of prayer and because last time he came on the show, I was sick. This time he came on the show, I'm sick. But
gotta get a revival.
Yeah,
you
that's right.
Revivals.
That's absolutely right. Yeah, but it's all good, man. He did a fantastic job then. He did a fantastic job now, and it's definitely a pleasure to have him on the show. Without further ado, ladies and gentlemen, let's get to the headlines. So we've been talking about Alberto El Patron, and you know, it's crazy. Just, you know, GFW for you, OWL for life. And man, I tell you, I listened to the conference call, and I actually transcribed a bunch of the conference call for WrestleZone. And so I was listening to the conference call and that we were a part of with Jeff Jarrett, and man, he was talking about how he didn't. He suspended, GFW suspended El Patron because of the ongoing investigation about battery. However, there was a question asked by another reporter whether he's going to be edited out of upcoming footage for the tapings. And he was like, no, we're not going to edit him out because, he's in so much stuff that we're not going to edit him out. It wouldn't look good for the company and so forth. And I'm just thinking in my head, like, why would you guys suspend him? Because here's the funny part. So they're going to, they're bringing back house shows, and they're supposed to be, they're having a house show on August the 6th, I believe, the first week of August. And El Patron is still scheduled to be a part of the event, the live event. And I'm thinking in my head, okay, so he's suspended, but he's still going to be a part of the weekly tapings the next few weeks because the tapings are already done. He's not going to be edited out. So we're going to see him every week. And then he's scheduled to come back the first week of August. And by that time, we're still going to be seeing him every week because of the GFW shows. So he's really not suspended. I mean, it was just really a PR stunt, really, because he's not suspended. I mean, he's suspended, but he's still competing for the show every week because of the tapings, and he's back on he's back on the events in August. So he's really not suspended. It's crazy because it just goes to show how much. Impact Wrestling is really hanging on, every move of Alberto El Patron and how much he is a asset for the company. But, he's been a hothead for quite some time, so I don't know if I'd put that much stock in him.
Yes, it's just the power of the owl. OWL.
For life.
And I mean, we can joke for days of that name, and our good old brother Jeff Jarrett, who respectfully been on both of our shows weeks apart. If it was any other sport, Guerrero would have got legitimately suspended. No problem. NFL, Major League Baseball, NBA, NHL.
He got suspended. Even if it was the WWE, he would have got suspended.
Yeah, but I mean, in the sense of if it was like WWE's number one guy, like their number one guy, and had their kind of allegations, would WWE actually suspend them? If they were,
for a month.
Yeah, he did, Reigns. But, I mean, you know, they still, Cena was still around then, you know, they still had Rob. Yeah, they did do that. You're right, WWE, well, then again, WWE would have no choice, so they're a publicly traded company. So you got, you're a publicly traded company, you know, this being a business like me, you got these vendors, WWE has no choice, regardless. Whether it be Reigns, Austin, Hogan, Captain the Fool Kid, Cena, this was them, they would have to suspend them for 30 days minimum, because you're going to lose money. And Anthem Impact Alpha Life is a privately owned company, so they can get away for a little bit more. But like you said, the suspension makes no sense. Why are you suspending them? If you're still going to be on TV every week, what's the point?
Right.
Because you got to make an example. I understand that. Let's be realistic. I mean, Del Rio and you talked off air. I know his agent. I know how much he was charging. Still to this day, how much he does for indies. It's never been a time any promoter is going to make that much back and make it in a black and make a profit from it. What's really going to hurt OWL to suspend him for 30 days? Is it really going to hurt? I mean, you still have Lashley. I mean, you could pump up some of the newer guys. I mean, come on. Del Rio is a name, but it's sad. What image and what example are you making for Global Force now?
Yeah.
Anybody else? So if I'm a mid-carder, wait, you suspend him. I can go ahead and do the same thing.
Yeah. I mean, especially a company that's had a dark cloud on them for so many years.
Exactly, and that's the last thing you need is. We all know we got a little bit of hot head, and it just makes no sense. It is exciting. Del Rio was always okay. I could go either or. If he's there, he's there. If he's not, he's not. He doesn't have good chemistry with a lot of the guys. He's not really a ring general. Our Watchmen anniversary of that match for Lashley, we all know definitely needed salvation. So it wasn't Lashley's fault. It wasn't Lashley's fault. That's putting it lightly.
Yeah, I agree, man. He's known to be solid in the ring a lot of the time, but I think the best thing they had going with Del Rio, with El Patron, is when he was actually the Mexican aristocrat, Alberto Del Rio. I think that when he had when he brought the cars in. When he had the scarves, it was a really, really good idea. And when they got away from that, it just kind of dwindled out. I'm gonna pull some strings. I'm gonna try to get him on my show here the next few weeks and see what we can do. Talk to my connects and see what we can do. I would love to talk to him about just his perception, just this perception people have for him. The reason why he's so vocal and the reason why he doesn't really, pay attention to the people he worked for when he kind of, makes his comments. So we'll see. We'll see about getting Paige on here too, or at least one of Paige's family members or something to that nature. All right, so ladies and gentlemen, let's get to the Ryback. It seems like we talk about Ryback all the time, at least for the past couple of weeks. And it's funny because he did, like I said last week, he deleted me from his Twitter, and I find him very funny. And because it's awesome, that somehow I had the opportunity to be deleted from Ryback's Twitter. I still don't know why. So Ryback or anybody who's on the Ryback team, feel free to email me. Let me know or tweet me when you unblock me. You can certainly tweet me. Let me know why you decided to block me. I'm certainly losing no sleep because I'm blocked by Ryback. It's actually a badge of honor. But,
I will continue to talk about to Ryback if what Ryback says is newsworthy. And this week he definitely said something newsworthy, and what that is that he revealed in his one of his latest podcasts that he was penciled in to compete against the Ultimate Warrior at WrestleMania 30. And I don't know what to say about this. So Mark Carano, you know, he's the senior director of talent relations. He's run under, you know, Triple H. And so I guess from what he said, I mean, I listened to what he said. He said that Carano showed him the book, and he was penciled in to compete against the Ultimate Warrior at WrestleMania 30. And Dana Warrior, you know, I actually was one of the first people who broke this story, and a lot of people started writing about it right after. And and so basically Dana Warrior caught wind of it, and because of the reports that were going on. So she commented about it. She wasn't having it. She was talking about people, you know, living off the backs of others. The comment she said complete verbatim. She said not true. It always saddens me when people tell untruths on a man's grave to promote their lives. Do your own work. Then you had a Mark talk about dirt sheets. Talk about before you listen to a podcast before you believe the clickbait dirt sheet reports. But it's funny that comment said that, because Ryback actually retweeted that comment and said, "Hope all is well." Gave the time frame of when he said what he said. And actually went completely against the clickbait dirt sheet reports, because it was exactly the proof that he said that he was competing against the Ultimate Warrior. So it made no sense. It made actually the mark look just terrible. And then Dana goes back and says, "I'm well, Ryan, cultivating a legacy, not living in fantasy." So what are your thoughts? Ryback and Ultimate Warrior, and then Dana Warrior saying, "Oh no, that's not true." And then Dana's agent said that he actually was the agent between, you know, with Warrior and the WWE, and went through everything. I mean, he did the whole thing from top to bottom with the negotiations and the communication with the WWE and the Ultimate Warrior, and he said that it was never ever mentioned that Ultimate Warrior was ever going to go against Ryback. So it seems like Carano might have been ribbing Ryback.
I was gonna say it probably was a rib. It's just a Ryan back. I don't really believe much that comes out of his mouth. I'm not really a big fan of Ryback, especially with his air quote podcast. And yes, I do know the guy who's Ryback's friend that helps run this show, Joe. I met him before. We didn't know each other mutually in the business, but I don't believe it. I believe Dana Warrior. Warrior wasn't in any shape. I can tell watching the Hall of Fame speech a few years ago. Roy wasn't in any shape to do anything in a ring physically. And WWE is smart. It is a machine. If Dave was going to get Warrior to do anything in a ring, he would have been prepping. But we've seen Triple H prep. What was it, 9 months, way before? I mean, we knew Don Lachin, which was going to face Sting. Triple H was already prepping 9 months ahead of time. Sting was already working out 9 months to get ahead of time. We don't figure anybody that's part-time they're going to build you up. So when you do wrestle, you're going to be into top shape.
Right.
Well, I don't believe Ryback. I don't. I mean, what would WWE want? I mean, what money would you make for Warrior against Ryback? I mean, let's think of it. I mean, more money was made when it was Triple H against Warrior, Mania 12, and the Huckster against the Nacho Man was bringing that tag, which might I add, those matches was actually edited out of the VHS rip, the VHS tape, and the DVD tape, and he still had more talk about it than.
Yeah.
I agree with Dana Warrior. I mean, why try to make this stuff relevant talking about it? Warrior didn't need Ryback. What would they benefit Warrior to even face Ryback? It makes sense. And it definitely does. So.
It would have made zero sense at all. So. I mean, I understand it may have given Warrior his, you know, one last hurrah, but at the same time, like you said, I mean, they're not just going to throw him out there, not knowing what type of shape he's in. And Ryback did mention that as far as just he didn't want to put him over because he didn't know what shape he was. But, you know, he really didn't have a choice if he wanted to put him over or not because, you know, he really didn't have that much clout in the WWE. But, you know, Ryback, if Ryback was the person chose to put over Warrior at WrestleMania 30, that is in a much better position that he actually was in Mania 30 because he ended up being a part of a four-way tag team match, you know, for the titles. It was an elimination match. He was teaming with Curtis Axel at the time, and he actually got eliminated by Cesaro. So when Cesaro was teaming up with Jack Swagger. So, you know, it's one of those things that he lost. He got pinned on the pre-show. And, you know, he was talking about, like, he, you know, he was in a good spot as a heel at the time. No, he wasn't because he was teaming with Curtis Axel. It was a dead-end tag team. And he ended up getting pinned on a pre-show. So he would have got pinned either way. So it would have been better for him to get a pin as a marquee match on the main show than to get pinned on the pre-show.
At the end of the day, if you say you're at a good spot in a company and you're on the pre-show, especially when it's WrestleMania, they'll let you know what spot you're in. And like I said, and granted, you know, I take them for granted salt because that's not always true, but you know, with respect goes to Baron Corbin and Ambrose, who we know didn't really deserve the pre-show. They should have been on the main. With respect to the Usos and the Dudleys, who could have easily been on the main. 9 times out of 10, if you're really on that level to where you must see TV, you're not going to be on a pre-show.
Yeah, no way.
You're going to be on the main show.
Absolutely. There's certain matches every year that it's like, okay, maybe it's debatable because they're on the fence of like, it's not a lot of steam going on with this match right now. It can afford being on the pre-show. And there are certain matches that they're like, no. I mean, maybe you'll open the show, but you're definitely not going to be on the pre-show. But it's interestingly enough that WrestleMania 30, Ryback was on the pre-show. And then I remember 32 in Dallas, he was on the pre-show, lost to Kalisto. And so,
right.
And this was when, you know, he actually had a better heel run, and it was during the Dallas time where not a lot of people was there. They were having issues. You know, were there in Dallas that year.
Yeah.
And they were having some issues with the entrance. So it was like an empty arena match. So it was just bad news for him on that pre-show as well. So he's been like the pre-show prince. That's what we should call
pre-show
him.
Pre-show back.
Prince. Right, pre-show back.
Pre-show back.
He hasn't really had the best run in the WWE.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, now he'll be more.
Let me go show together.
Yeah.
Feed me relevant.
Yeah. Well, one thing is now irrelevant is Talking Smack. It's not canceled, but it's no longer airing weekly. Now, they're going to keep it for post shows. Like it's scheduled to run after Battleground this Sunday. We'll talk about the predictions here. But I thought it was good. Meltzer did make a good point that it was, a lot of the recent ones, it was like 18th as far as network of views. And that was under like syndications or reruns of the WWE version of ECW. And so ranked number 18th, it gave Vince McMahon even more of a reason to cut it, because there were some rumblings that Vince McMahon was the one who decided to cut it for the sake of making 205 Live something a little better. So, and we'll see. And at the end of the day, 205 Live, and I've said this many a times, it needs to go before or after NXT and be called 205 Prime. But no matter what you do to try to uplift or try to put more focus on 205 Live, it's certainly not going to make it better. It's like forcing someone to watch something with the hopes that they'll like it, and they didn't like it before you forced them to watch it. So it's not going to make a difference. So, I thought 205 Live, Talking Smack was really good. It helped, it really catapulted kind of the revival of The Miz and helped people like Baron Corbin as well, Kevin Owens to an extent. Of course, Daniel Bryan, Shane McMahon, it was good to see like some candid interviews with them. So, it really helped a lot of people. I think it was really one of the best elements of the network.
Yeah, I enjoyed Talking Smack. Brawl Talk as well, which I didn't really watch much, but those little type of shows, those post game shows, definitely did help. It did help. Help the evolution of some characters. So I know WWE is cutting costs, and they're also not doing much of Power anymore during the weekly shows, SmackDown and Raw, and they're saving it just for pay-per-views.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, granted, a lot goes into the post shows, because I was saying this on my show early tonight, and in general, explaining to somebody 2 days ago about this is more than just the pre-show's canceled, that's it. You think about the dynamics of a pre-show, so that means the superstars have to stay an extra hour. Everything goes in there. You do Talking Smack the Raw Talk, the superstar has to stay for an extra hour on TV that you see. Then that means also there's extra equipment that you gotta bring. Then there's actual space that you gotta rent for that area. That's extra time for the segments that you got to do. It's extra time for the pre show of the post game show. And then there's the post game show of the post game show that we don't see. And then the crew still got to break everything down. So there's a lot that goes on with just an hour or so of a post game show. So, like you said, I like to call, just keep it, a minimum after the pay per view that way it can feel more special. Mm-hmm. And, like you said, 205 Live, like I did 205 Prime, and maybe they can use other elements to, go back to WWE got away with. Remember early in the year, late last year, he got back to doing in-ring interviews, like the old days, and then he kind of got rid of it real quick. They could go back to doing that to help enhance characters.
Man, I remember when, Earthquake would be, bouncing and rocking back and forth, and Jimmy Hart would be interviewing with the Earthquake, and just kind of like those inset, you know, interviews during the match.
Yeah.
I thought that was actually hilarious back in the day. But it was so – I love those interviews. I love the interviews. Two of the biggest things I remember back regarding interviews back in the day, the inset interviews, you know, the small windows during the match in the corner. And then the podium interviews when, you know, Mean Gene would interview someone on the podium away from the ring. Man, those were classic. I love those podium interviews. Yeah, those were awesome.
And then not to forget the ramp entrance interviews, WCW.
Yeah.
It's always used to do the interviews in the ring or on the ramp.
Yeah, Oakland would do those too.
Used to do the post, and shout out to my buddy. A lot of people tend to forget him. What's my name? Ken Rushnick. Remember him?
Mm-hmm.
I think Ken Rushnick was, also did the interviews too, right before Oakland too, around that time. So, you know, the backstage interviews, the PowerPoint presentation, background, anybody had a graphic, and now only Bray Wyatt has a graphic now for his name or whatever.
Yeah.
Just
this is
good stuff, man.
This is
the good old interviews. So maybe they can bring that back to Hope.
Yeah, absolutely. And let's talk about Hardy's Broken Dispute, Broken Brilliance. First of all, let's start off with what Matt Hardy wants to do with this whole lawsuit.
Delete.
Absolutely. So let's get your thoughts. Give me a good solid minute on what your thoughts are as far as just this whole broken dispute.
I listened to a show, and I know we have strict rules both on our shows. We don't promote much of any other shows. I'm not going to mention the show's name, but I heard someone mention this, listening to this other famous show that's nationally known, mentioned about it's to the point that you see so much of the innuendos of the delete and the obsolete and the fadeaway. It's like if it does happen, it kind of kills the luster of it. And you see it so much, and with the whole lawsuit, it's back and forth. It's Jared is saying one thing, and then the Hardy is saying this, and then they're kind of foreshadowing for them to become broken, and, you know, Hardy's going back to the old face paint, Jeff that is. So I hope, like you said, this lawsuit is deleted. I hope it goes away. If the Hardys become broken, I think that'll be great. But then it's, you know, sometimes less is more, and the fact that you see so much of it now, maybe because it's WWE, especially when it was TNA, because you didn't see it as much. But now, because it's every week, it's obsolete, and delete, brother Nero, and fade away, and then in the old paint, and the signs, and the taunts, and I don't want to see that all the time, because when the SDD debut is broken, it's not going to be as special. Maybe to the four kids that don't watch OWL or TNA or Impact Anthem, whatever you want to call it, maybe for them it will be special, but for us, they always know about it. We're going to have to take away the luster. So I hope my heart will be getting this thing.
Obsolete.
And maybe Scott should just keep her mouth shut and just go back to playing piano.
Yeah, Robbie's very quick to say some things. But the funny thing is that they had an agreement where there was a settlement reached with the Hardys regarding the broken gimmick, and Rebby was supposed to, you know, basically if she said something bad about TNA, she would get fined $5,000. That's what the agreement was. But Ed Nordholm and Anthem, they stalled on their end, according to Matt and Rebby Hardy. So, I mean, come on. I mean, I understand. I wrote a very long transcript on what Jeff Jarrett said about just the intellectual property. And, you know, there's a portion of it that made sense. But it's like, you know,
let it go.
It, you know, and here's the thing. If you put it in perspective, if The Undertaker, Vince wouldn't allow The Undertaker to go to OWL as The Undertaker. So I get that.
Don't.
I understand the IP point on that. However, I understand the Hardy's part too, because Matt Hardy was the one who funded TNA for weeks, you know, so they won't go under. He had it at his house. A lot of the footage was at his house or Jeff's house. And according to what Matt and Rebby are saying, they didn't pay Senior Benjamin a dime. So they've got a lot of weight, too, as far as their end of the bargains as well. So, you know, I want to see the broken, because the regular Matt and Jeff Hardy, it's been 3.5 months now. I think the nostalgia Hardy's run has kind of faded away.
Yeah.
Classified itself as obsolete.
Yeah,
I think that the broken movement is good. And the fact that they're continuing to lose every week, I really think that that's a good sign. I mean, because it seems like they're booking them to change into the broken, you know, Matt and Broken and
yeah.
Nero.
And they're like 40 pounds more. 40 pounds ago, you know, coolly. What's the nickname we get the small trombones?
Yeah.
Jeff has not cleared the small trombone since 2005. He's never cleared it. He just falls flat on the abdomen. Matt works about a heavy. But that's 40 pounds heavier. Bald spots. It's not the attitude era no more. They need the broken hearties. They need to take off their shirt slow. They can't take their
I was looking at that match on Raw. We'll get to the Raw and SmackDown. Yeah, we'll get, man. It was, they were trying to do the synchronized slam on and then like the splash leg drop thing. I mean, it took them like forever to like go to the bounce off the ropes, and oh man, I was like, this is it right here.
Oh,
like
man,
they're really showing their age.
I love the Hardys. Matt and Jeff, I remember them when, and I think it's probably one of the few moments Pat was a prophet in wrestling. I remember that, and Dave and myself, or maybe started still about the same age. I remember watching Shotgun Saturday Night, 96, and I remember it was on 12 midnight, and I remember watching it with my mom and seeing the Hardy Boys, not even before them started with Superstars. One of them shows was 95. My mom was saying the Hardys at the Z, and he had them little Aztec paint things, them the old school, and I looked at them and said, they're going to be something. There's something about them. And a year or two ago, you know, we had the Hardy Boys. But gosh, 40, 50 pounds ago, I mean, Jeff Hardy's sober now. We don't have a repeat of him, but him and Sting went through. Matt Hardy is 50 pounds heavier. I mean, their leg drops are slow. They can't run. And I love the Hardy Boys. It's like I could say it. I compared it to them and to this team that one of my favorite teams, the greatest teams of all time, the Rock and Roll Express. I mean, they move faster than the Hardys.
Yeah, sure do.
First, you want the Robert Gibson.
Yeah. But the thing is about the Rock and Roll Express is that they didn't take they didn't take ladder bumps. That's what happens when you take all those ladder bumps for 15 and 20 years.
Yeah.
So now you can feel it. you can feel it as far as just taking all those bumps. Yeah.
I mean, but then also look at Edge and Christian. Edge and Christian still can move great.
Yeah, but you know, Edge had neck issues. Left in that. He had to retire because of his neck. And Christian, I was gonna say Christian had to retire because of concussions.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it looked great. I mean, Christian, you know, looked like $1 million when he came back and was in great shape, but all those concussions, I mean, all those years of TLC matches, it came back to haunt him, unfortunately.
You can't tell me that man weighs more than 200 pounds. They keep saying he's 225. I'm sticking to him weighing about 198.
When Christian came back toward the last part, I mean, that he was so skinny.
He had to be 195.
His gut was like caving in. Like that's like he was like, oh, what is like? Is he eating like carrots and water for breakfast, lunch, and dinner?
You can see the definition of his navel.
Yeah,
his belly button. That's when you know you. That's when you know
it was caving in. Like his belly was literally like it was like inward. And like
yeah,
it wasn't even like angle, because angle I he has like a I call it angle. I always said that angle had like a muscle gut, and like he had abs like crazy, but he had like he had a bit of a muscle gut. But Christian, there was a time where he was, you know, he was heavier, you know, which was good, but. Man, I tell you, I mean, he came back and he was skinny as just a toothpick, man. But I've always liked Christian better than Edge, though. Edge is, you know, he ended up being Hall of Fame worthy with his resume. I still think he went in a little bit too early. But as of now, like if Edge went in the Hall of Fame this year, I'd be totally fine with it, because he, you know, he proved to be a Hall of Fame worthy competitor. No, Christian's still not in the Hall of Fame because he's still kind of like officially retired, but he's like unofficially retired right now. So hopefully there was some talks of him and Regal going in this year, but that didn't happen. So I think that you don't think he should be
sorry,
in?
I don't. Regal, yes. Christian, no.
No for Christian.
Name. WWE Hall of Fame is starting to become like the New Age Four Kids. Everybody gets a trophy. There's no first place. You're second or third place. You get a trophy. You're like sixth place out of ten. You get a little beret. You get a little ribbon. You get a little no. Stop it. I grew up. You're first place or you just lose. If you wasn't first place, you were second. You lost. You sucked up your tears, you cried, sniffed, and snotted, and you had to go home, suck it up, and then work hard to be number one. Because no one remembers silver medalists, no one remembers bronze medalists, even in school. You never hear
But I like
say,
looking
oh,
at the I like looking at the Hall of Fame now, because like I was there live, you know, front row seats, and so it was really good to experience just like. All of the speeches, like I enjoyed the speeches every year. Like DDP was really good. You know, Bischoff introducing DDP was really good. Even Roots, you know, Kids was really cool. You know, so it was awesome to see. Yeah,
it was special for us because a lot of our friends was inducted to the Hall of Fame. Teddy, DDP, Bischoff. But I say all that to say, you never hear schools and people say, oh. Let's get a silver medalist and a bronze medalist. No, it's all about the gold. Nothing against silver, gold, bronze medalist, nothing against that. What I'm saying is that it seems like the Hall of Fame now, they're running out of people. And then you have people that like, and nothing against Christian. I like Christian's work. I think he was good. I just honestly don't think, if it was, not to say it's not legit, but if it was more, if it's more of a shoot, like a legit Hall of Fame, I honestly don't think Christian's work, him as a tag team, yes, as a Christian, definitely. But Christian by himself, singles, I really don't think his singles work is Hall of Fame worthy. Now, if he gets in, of course, I'm not going to go against it. But his singles work, and some of that isn't his fault. I mean, I've been told a WWE writer, Vince did not push Christian because he thought Christian had a ready face. Vince hated how Christian's face looked.
Yeah.
So some of that isn't Christian's fault. Because, of course, the machine, of course, is all about who's behind you. I mean, his run with Orton, his last run was great. Those three matches were awesome. All that kept was kind of punishment. So, but I don't know. I think Christian was good. I just honestly don't think that he's Hall of Fame worthy as a singles wrestler. If he's not the only one in the Hall of Fame to this day.
I think that Christian should have. I think he should be in the Hall of Fame. One, because of his, you know, tag team credentials, and that he, you know, he was in Edge is in the Hall of Fame. But this is how I look at the Hall of Fame. I kind of look at the Hall of Fame as like the Olympics. You have like your bronze medal people. You have, silver medal people. You have, your gold medal people. Everybody gets acknowledged, but, one person just gets acknowledged more, you know? And that's how I look at the Hall of Fame within the WWE.
Yeah.
Like, everybody's on the podium. You know what I mean? Like, all three of people are on the same podium. It's just that silver is higher than bronze, and gold is higher than silver. But it's the same podium. So that's how I look at the Hall of Fame. Like when I look at like the preliminary people, I think of like the bronze and the silver medalists, and the closer every year is like the gold medalists of the Hall of Fame. You know, like Angle and Nash and Sting, Austin. You know, all of them are like the Hall of Fame gold medalists. Andre. You know, and so Hogan, Flair, Michaels, all of them are the gold medalist Hall of Famers. Now, so now you have people like, the Rock and Roll Express, you know, the Rick Rude, you know, like a silver medalist to me.
Freebird.
Like as far as single people, you know, like. I wouldn't consider Edge a gold medalist. I'd make him more of a silver medalist. You know, like Christian to me is a silver medalist. You know, he's like a silver, or maybe even bronze. You know, put him on first. Santana. You know what I mean? But he still is acknowledged. He's still in the Hall of Fame. He's not a gold medalist. He's not the one to close the show, but he's still on the podium. So that's what I look at Christian.
I would, someone who didn't headline, I would give, because of the cultural impact, I would give Ron Simmons a gold medal.
Oh, yeah.
Because
absolutely.
Of his cultural impact. Simmons, yeah. Bruno, Pedro, Inoki, of course. Carlos Colon. Wendy Savage was very good going to get in the Hall of Fame. Wayne.
Did you just say Salvi over here?
That would be Braun.
No.
but somebody who should be in the Hall of Fame that isn't yet is Rick Martel.
You said Rick Martel?
Rick Martel.
Oh yeah, I totally agree. Yeah, I think he should be in the Hall of Fame. So. Yep, AWA champ, former Intercontinental champ. Former WCW television champion.
Television champion.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Did he ever win the Intercontinental title?
Yeah.
Did he win as the model? Because I know him and Michaels were going at it while.
I can look that up now.
He won the WWE. Nope. Never won a singles title. He won the tag team title three times Tony Garea, twice, and Tito and Strike Force one time. Yep. Never won. He won the WCW. I know he won he won the television championship in WCW. I do remember that. Because that was during the time where it was like him and Saturn and Booker T and Chris Benoit, all four of them were kind of like really heavy in the TV title scene at that time. But yeah, he never won. The Disco Inferno was kind of in a heavy attack in the TV title scene at that time as well. But yeah, I definitely think he has a Hall of Fame resume. Again, more like a, you know, a bronze or a silver medalist. Well, I would say more of a bronze, you know, type of medalist, but I think he still deserves to be in there. All right, real quick, let's get to the Raw and SmackDown review. We'll be right back. Your thoughts on Raw and SmackDown?
Reverse SmackDown was the straight filler. Randy Orton, man, they're the most boring person. And I was more of an Orton guy, but gosh, anybody that thinks this Punjabi prison match is okay, well, it's going to be better than the past ones. But at least these guys can move. It won't be a Kali, won't be a Taker, won't be Batista, won't be Big Show in it. But gosh, Orton the Clown, that Punjabi prison, the big old teeth pit cage. Gosh, so this SmackDown was a filler to me. It wasn't really anything special. Raw overall, I thought Raw was a. I enjoyed Raw. The Jason Jordan, whatever, the TK left. Vince Cruz, he hates tag teams. You have four tag teams, and you have two divisions. It makes a lot of sense. Love the Joe and Reigns ending. I love the match. They were chemistry. Braun coming out, destroying them all. And a shout out to Dave Matthews Day in a lot of sense and for splitting Fat Bell in the head. And still to this day, I'm really trying. I love Bray Wyatt, but I'm really trying to understand. It is still him around. He's feuding with this guy. He's feuding with that. He's going to quit the messages to this guy. Next, he's back to feuding against Finn. When he started the feud against Finn, when they first did the whole shake-up, superstar shake-up, and that disappeared. So it's like, what are you doing, Bray? You just randomly. Yeah. I thought Raw was good. In the cruiser division, I guess they decided when they did budget cuts to say, well, no Pyro, no talk, no Raw talk, no SmackDown talk, and no purple for the cruiserweights.
No more ropes. No more ropes.
No match. Come out and wrestle.
Yeah, it's just getting worse and worse for me. As far as Raw, man, I don't know what I'm gonna do on Raw, man. I would do my Bray Wyatt, but I'm sick. But I've been told that I do a really good Bray Wyatt, man. So but yeah, I'm definitely not. Physically able to do it. But as far as Raw is concerned, it was promising. The Ali and Gallagher and Kendrick and Gulak match, that was just Nashville was actually a pretty decent crowd, but they definitely didn't care about that match, that's for sure. I predicted Show and Kaz with Enzo, you know, in Show's corner. I knew that was going to happen. I called that for SummerSlam. I wrote about that on Daily DDT last week. And I think a week or two ago. But I knew that was going to happen. It's interesting that they blew off Balor and Samson just to put Wyatt back with Balor. Like, I really don't understand. Like you said, I mean, how in the world are you expecting someone to gain steam as a character if they can't even be in the same spot for, you know, 2 weeks? You threw Wyatt with Seth Rollins, man, and then he wins, and then he jumps over. You know, Rollins gets no retribution. Rollins goes over to Ambrose against the Miz, which is a terrible angle to me. I'd rather see Rollins against Miz for the Intercontinental Championship. But I think it's terrible. I mean, the only thing that would have made sense to me is that if the Intercontinental title didn't have anything to do with, you know, anything, Here are two things that would have made sense to me. If Reigns would have been out of the world title, universal title picture, actually did like a one-time reunion with the Shield for SummerSlam against Visage, I'm like okay with that. But then the Intercontinental title is not for grabs. I don't like when that happens, especially with Big Four pay-per-views. And this is the only other reason why I think that I'll be okay with. If they kind of do this blow-off match with Miz and Mistourage against Rollins and Ambrose, there was some speculation that was supposed to be for SummerSlam. I'm glad it's not for SummerSlam because that's definitely not a SummerSlam match. I would be okay with the triple threat between Rollins, Ambrose, and Miz at SummerSlam for the Intercontinental title. That would be a good match. So if they did that, that's a marquee match. That's an anticipated match that would be really good to look at. So if they do that for the sake of having a triple threat match between Rollins, Ambrose, and Miz at SummerSlam, I'm okay with. But other than that, I'll pass. So yeah, the four-way match, it looks like the four-way match is happening at SummerSlam between Braun and Joe and Reigns. That should be really good match. As far as Jason Jordan, it was really underwhelming for me. I wasn't.
Tears come down his face.
I basically wrote on WrestleZone right afterwards that I think that it somehow is going to involve Stephanie McMahon. I think it's a ruse. If it pushes Jason Jordan, it's a benefit for him. He's a great athlete. Hopefully this creates some character in him because he really didn't have much of a character. They kind of had a the Steiner brothers, type of feel to him. So they really didn't have a lot of character. I mean, Gable was charismatic because he did the Ready, Willing, and Gable. But as far as Jason Jordan, he wasn't very charismatic, so to speak. But
he's going to be the Rick Steiner.
This can bring something out of him, perhaps. Maybe somehow Stephanie McMahon gets involved, like I wrote about. It becomes a ruse. Maybe he's with Steph and he's not really his son. Somehow it unfolds. It should be interesting. As far as SmackDown is concerned, I cannot take. I'm done with Mahal. I tried with Mahal being champ. I can't do it anymore because he talks like this. He talks like he has a horse every single week. You put Jobby Britson match, and I tell you what, Randy Orton, every week what you do, come out here. And I don't even get a main event spot. Randy Orton and the Punjabi. Now I'm going to speak to my people. And I'm like, man, his mic work is horrible, man. I can't do it. Yeah. I mean,
better than Rollins.
No, absolutely not. It's not. Absolutely not. Because he speaks like this every week. It's like he has a horse and he squeals every time, every week.
Yeah,
and then he speaks in Punjabi. And I'm like, oh my goodness, man.
His
I
neck
can't
veins
do it.
Between him and Randy Savage, neck veins. Good gosh.
Yeah, absolutely.
And Jinder's kids.
But here's the thing. Here's the sad part about all this. Every single week, Jinder Mahal does not get the main event spot. Every single week, he has made that title look so unimportant. The couple months that he's had it, it's so sad how unimportant. He never gets a main event spot, ever. I think the last main event spot he had was against
Luke Harper.
I don't even know if the Mojo match was a main event spot.
I remember 3 weeks ago, he made a main event at SmackDown against Luke Harper.
Yeah, I think that was the one that was the Mojo wasn't a main event. I think that was the only one that he had a main event. That's so sad. That's ridiculous to me. So it just goes to show that he's not worthy. I mean, he's not even worthy of main eventing SmackDown. I mean, that's the sad part of all of this. He can't even main event SmackDown on a consistent basis. How is he supposed to represent the title, the WWE Championship?
That is true. However, he's still doing better than Bray when Bray was champion of SmackDown. You know why? Because at least Mahal was on every week and at least wrestled. And when Bray was champ, Bray wasn't even on SmackDown. He
showed Mahal barely wrestles. Mahal doesn't wrestle. He comes out and he cuts promos either on the TitanTron or in the
ring with Ginger's kids.
Yeah, I mean, he doesn't.
Yeah, what I'm saying is, at least Mahal, I agree with you, but compared to Bray's title run, at least Mahal had at least two or three matches since his reign on TV. And at least we see him on TV.
Yeah, but he mid-card.
Bray was,
Bray, he had a really good match with Cena and AJ on SmackDown. That was a really good match. That main event.
Champ?
That triple threat was amazing. And
champ?
He retained it. Yeah. On SmackDown,
I forgot about that.
That triple threat match was one of the best matches.
That was a good match.
Yeah,
it was. You know what?
With
MC
and AJ. And he retained it. It was a very good match. But Jinder, he wrestles mid-carders. He wrestles Jinder. He wrestles Luke Harper and Mojo Rawley and Ty Dillinger. That has been his opponent. That's been his opponents. He wrestled Ty Dillinger last week. That just goes to show he is such a mid-card guy. He just that they booked him so poorly. All right, real quick, we're short for time, so let's get into the flavor real quick.
It is now time for the flavor of the week.
All right, real quick. Razor wins. Steiner wins. Michaels wins. Shyster. Bret Hart. Lawler and Brett was disqualification after that. Borger wins, Taker wins, Tatanka and Smoking Gun wins, and then Luger beats Yokozuna by count out the World Heavyweight Championship and celebrates as if he won the title.
B minus. this SummerSlam was funny. It was hilarious for the time. He tried so hard to push Luger.
Yeah,
Luger that game really still getting, the Lexus Press is still getting pushed more than Jinder Mahal.
Yeah, real quick. let's get to 94 real quick. Taker versus Taker. That was basically the big Lundra Blaze, Bonacano, Shyster, and Bam Bam Bigelow, Tatanka beating Lex Luger, Razor beating Diesel, winning the Intercontinental Championship, Jared Mabel, Bret Hart, and Owen Hart. Still K's match. That was a fantastic match. By the way, I give 93 a B. What do you give 94?
The cage match was A. Everything else was one. No, you know, I take it back. No, I give it a B because Leslie Nelson and the Undertaker was an Undertaker. Leslie Nelson skit.
I was a big fan of Bret Hart and Owen Hart. Yeah, so.
Yeah, that was a great. That's one of my favorite matches.
Yeah, I give it a B+. All right, 95 was Diesel and Mabel. What do you give it? Captain Taker. I give it a D as well. I like Mikers and Razor. That was really good, but everything else was rough.
Oh, man.
96, real quick, Michaels and Vader. Bullet Room Brawl with Mankind defeating the Taker.
That's C plus. That Bullet Room Brawl was horrible.
And then I give
the politics of Michaels. Yeah.
97, Brett defeating Taker with Michaels.
A plus.
Almost half hour match. Real good. The Stone Cold defeating Owen for the Intercontinental Championship.
I give it an A plus only because of the promo. Heart and Soul. I still got the Dirt of
Mega. I give it a B. It was some decent moments, but not all of it was. Real quick, 98, lengthy card. Austin retains the title by beating Taker. Triple H, the ladder match was really good. That was 98.
That's about a B plus. The only match I'm with yellow ladders.
B plus as well. All right, real quick, and then of course you had a 99, which was Mankind defeating Austin and Triple H, you know, for the WWE Championship. Brock defeating Billy Gunn, gets my butt match.
That's the Illuminati SummerSlam. That thing is weird. That's a C. That SummerSlam, that year alone was weird. That SummerSlam was so off to me.
Yeah, I give it about a C+. All right, really, really, really quick. Let's get into Battleground predictions. We only got a couple minutes. We got Jinder Mahal against Randy Orton.
Jinder Juice. Maharaja.
Yeah, I got Jinder as well. They're doing Ty Dillinger and Aiden English again. Who do you have here?
Ty Dillinger never wins, so English will win.
Dillinger's been winning a little bit on. I don't think he's lost on SmackDown side of stuff for Jinder, but he's beat Aiden English a whole lot of times. So Aiden English for me. Real quick, Flag Matt, Cena, Rusev.
Chatting the four kids. Cena.
Yes, Cena. Usos, New Day for the tag team titles.
12 days, Usos.
12 days, I agree. I think they'll do something with the new. They'll bring this to SummerSlam somehow. Charlotte Flair, Becky Lynch, Natalya, Tamina, and Lana, 5-way elimination match for the number one contendership.
Lana's going to be the first to eliminate. It won't be Tamina and Natalie not one. So we'll go with Ashley, Charlotte Flair.
Charlotte Flair against Naomi. Yeah, I can see that. Charlotte Flair. Let's do Shinsuke Nakamura and Baron Corbin.
Nakamura.
Yes, I agree. Styles and Owens.
You gotta give it to Styles. They can do the rematch at SummerSlam.
Yeah, I agree. I think Styles. Now I think we'll see Styles and Cena at SummerSlam
again.
The United States Championship. Yeah, I mean their matches have been fantastic. All of them have. I wonder if Corbin cashes in.
I was thinking that.
After the boot, I'm tired of Mahal and Orton. Yeah, that would be something interesting if that happened. All right, ladies and gentlemen, let the listeners know, Evan, where to find you on Under the Mat Radio.
Under the Mat Radio, you can find us every Tuesday night, 7 p.m. on Blog Talk Radio, www.blogtalkradio.com. We'll follow us on YouTube, Under the Mat Radio, Instagram. On Twitter @tech_UTMR.
Nice. Of course, the Pancakes of Power Slam show, 277 episodes in the books. Thank you to Billy Gunn for being on the show again, talking about some G1. Also, follow us at Crave Wrestling, @CraveWrestling on Twitter. And of course, join the Facebook fan page, Crave Wrestling. You can catch me every week wrestling, writing a lot for WrestleZone.com. And also The Inquisitor and Daily DDT. I see all types of shared articles. Keep me in prayer. As you can see, that I'm still really trying to get better as far as feeling better. Prayerfully by next week, I'll feel better. God is good, and you all have a wonderful evening. God bless, and enjoy your week of wrestling. We'll be right back.